This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. In the late 1960s, Black and Latino members of the LGBTQ community were struggling to find a safe place to express themselves. Black and Latino drag queens wanted to create these spaces, so they began hosting pageants of their own in New York City and Washington, D.C. These pageants eventually became events where people could come to compete and be judged by their peers. The scene was made popular by the 1990 documentary Paris is Burning.
Gay people, men, gather together under one roof and decide to have a competition amongst themselves. Balls.
And more than four decades later, these balls are happening in cities all over the world. Gerard Gaskin, is a New York-based photographer who's been documenting the scene for more than 20 years. He has won the Center for Documentary Studies' first book prize in photography. His book of photography is legendary, Inside the House Ballroom Scene, and he is in town for a talk at CDS, but first joins us. Gerard Gaskin, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit more about this scene. I want to just kind of know what it is and then where it came from.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, the scene, it basically started in Harlem. There was a really famous femme queen named Crystal LaBeija, and she used to do drag pageants, and she then felt that she was being discriminated against and then just kind of started her own thing. And that's how it kind of came about. There's a really famous space up in Harlem called the Elks Lodge that the first balls used to be held at. And it just kind of grew, you know, and they started having houses. And houses are, in some ways, a kind of a little bit of what we can consider almost like a street gang, right, where there's a group. And, you know, we rep this specific house, the House of LaBeija, the House of Christian, the House of Dupree, the House of Pendavis. And they usually have a mother and a father of the house. And then they have children who then are part of the scene. And they then go and then compete as part of a house in this competition.
And is it a geographic space or is it like a school, an artistic school?
You know, it could be almost anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's usually in, like, really dusty halls, right? Because most of the times it would happen really, really late at night. A ball usually starts around 12 o'clock, and it goes from about 12 o'clock at night to about 6, 7, maybe 8 o'clock in the morning. Usually when the sun comes up is when the ball is – people are leaving the ball.
And it's competition.
Yeah, it's competition. It could be simply Vogue dancing. It could be walking the runway. It could be having the prettiest face. It could be having the best outfit. It could be then creating a whole complete outfit from scratch. Or then they have a competition where we used to have there's Metro cards in New York City, and you would then have to make or create a costume out of Metro cards as a competition.
And Real is another one. So tell us about Real, and then Bizarre is another. So give us
right.
an idea what's happening. In
we call it more like realness, right? The idea of trying to figure out how you can pass in the real world, right? You know, there are categories like executive realness. So you come and you show up and you dress and you have to come with your briefcase and, you know, you're in a suit and you're supposed to pass as a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Or, you know, there's a competition called schoolboy realness and you have to come with books and a book bag and kind of show the way that you would think that a straight boy would look in that same space.
So this is a party. It's a great time. It's a way to get together. It's a way to be safe. But also, it's a real a kind of expression of the ambiguity of these boundaries. It blurs these boundaries intentionally. Tell us more about that and the power of that.
Well, I mean, to me, that's the ultimate power of the ballroom scene is that idea that you can come and play with the idea of gender and sexuality in a way that they can't really do it outside of that space. It's so important to see, you know, 1 minute someone walking down the street normally, and then the next minute they're in high heel shoes and stockings and a dress with a wig on and so on and so forth. Or next minute they're dressed up like a cartoon character, like, I don't know, like Snoopy or whatever, and trying to then dance or walk or whatever. It's that carnivalistic style of thing is the thing. I know it drove me, because I'm originally from Trinidad and Tobago. To me, the place where carnival is carnival. And so for me, that's what ultimately drove me to this space, because of the carnival experience.
And carnival is a liminal experience. It's a liminal holiday. It happens between seasons. And it's that time that really kind of proves the folly of the rule, that these rigid rules about gender role and what is gender are nonsense. And we can so not only is it a safe place to embody these things, but it's a really way of mocking the social order that places so much importance on these artificial borders.
Yeah, definitely. You're right, 100%. I think that's clearly the idea of what I love about the space. They definitely mock and they definitely play with that idea of what that is. And so that's the thing. I mean, you know, I think also when you think about, say, hip-hop music and hip-hop culture and the machismo of that whole scene, and then playing with the idea of what a homo thug or a thug is, and all of those things are part of what I love about ballroom culture.
What got you interested in this?
Wow. I got connected to this. I used to hang out in 42nd Street. When 42nd Street was 42nd Street. I always joke with people about this. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, 42nd Street was, oh my God, it was like, I don't know how to give it a perfect thing, but what it was is they had a whole lot of old theaters, a lot of peep shows and pornographic movies were shown in these theaters, and it was just this crazy place. And then there was this one place called Show World. It was on the corner of 8th Avenue and 42nd Street, and it was a peep show place. And a peep show is a place where, you know, you basically go into a booth and a woman would come and she would undress in front of you, basically. And but in the same place, downstairs in the basement, was where the femme queens were. And a femme queen is what we consider a pre-op transsexual, a person who is transitioning from being a male into being a female. And I was like, wow. I was kind of taken back about looking at someone who looked like a woman. And what was this all about? And in some ways, that's how this whole thing started. And they then invited me to the balls, because they were, at that point, the people who worked there were mothers and fathers of houses.
So you understood, you got to know a little bit about the world, but as a photographer, it was not easy for you to gain access, right?
No. I didn't take a picture for the first year. All I did was kind of hang out and, you know, kind of say hi and bye and stuff like that. And then what I then did was I then did all these kind of portraits of the femme queens. And then when I did the portraits of the femme queens, then they then kind of like gave me this kind of free access or easier access into the space, because they then said, all right, Gerard is okay. I've seen the pictures that Gerard has taken. I like the pictures Gerard has taken. Maybe we can let him take pictures here.
Yes, you initially talked about the kind of the fact that the scene had become racialized when one femme queen decided that she had been dissed by at drag pageants, started her own. Is it still that way? Are they still kind of separate communities?
Yeah, they're very, very separate communities. You know, the ballroom scene is very, very different than a drag show, right? You know, drag shows are like RuPaul's Drag Race, where it's a male dressing up as a female and then putting on a show, maybe lip syncing and blah, blah, blah. And in some ways, that's how most of the white shows look like. A ball is almost all inclusive. There is femme queens who are, we consider pre-op transsexuals. There are butch queens who are basically gay men. There are butches who are female to male transgender people, and then there are women. And they have different categories for each one of those groups, right? And at times there are a category where a butch queen is dressed up in drag, but that's not the only thing.
Well, the scorekeeping can get complicated.
You can. I mean, early on, I was very kind of like, what is this? I would have to ask somebody and tap them on the shoulder. What's this category again? You know, I didn't know.
You eventually did gain access. You've got a number of beautiful photos in this collection. But this one I think is interesting because it looks like you're behind the scenes here.
Yes, I am. I'm in a hotel room. It's Jaylin. Jaylin Avisu is his name. And we're in a hotel room in Washington, D.C., and he's getting ready to be, and he, you would consider, is a butch queen up in drag because he dresses up in drag, and he lives his life as a man, and he was dressing up as a woman in that scene, and he has somebody basically holding a stencil to make sure that, you know, he can paint his eyebrows in.
Bizarre is another category, and I believe that's what's represented on the cover. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. That is what's on the represented on the cover. That's Taz, and Taz actually also does he dresses windows for The Gap, and he's a designer, and you know, is trying to do that thing. But he also comes to the balls and does these performances and does this bizarre categories.
You talked about it starting in Harlem. Has it worked its way south?
Yeah. I mean, there are balls in North Carolina. There's balls in Virginia. There's balls in Atlanta. There's balls in Kentucky now. There's balls in Ohio now. There's balls in Texas. Yeah, there are balls everywhere in the United States now.
And what about sort of spreading to the mainstream? There's always, I mean, sort of Madonna's Vogue comes to mind quickly, but are there other ways in which it's finding itself?
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, I think the dance music community has used ballroom dancers in their videos and stuff like that. And then, you know, a lot of the stylists in, you know, mainstream music and music in general, a lot of them come out of balls. I think the new thing is that there are a lot of young dancers who Vogue is now who have gone into Europe now a lot. They go to Russia, they go to Norway, they go to Sweden and perform and then teach young girls and boys in these countries how to Vogue.
How have things changed? Because you've been documenting this for about 20 years now, right?
Yeah. Very early on. I mean, I've started out, I say, in the film days, and now I'm in the digital age. Very different scene in a way. And I think in some ways, of course, the participants drive the scene, and they then change the scene in ways. And of course, with technology, things have changed in a lot of ways. I was talking to someone recently, and I was saying to them, you know, 20 years ago, it was harder to photograph at a ball. With now, it's a lot easier just because these young people have Facebook and they have Instagram, and so they're then taking a lot of pictures of themselves. So when someone comes in and photographs them, it's not so much of a big deal. And not only that, but I think the country's changed. You know, now we have gay marriage in 5 or 10 states or whatever, and so it's a acceptance around gay, the identity is much different than, say, 20 years ago.
If you're not accustomed to this scene and you look at these photos, you view them one way. If this is your scene, you view them another. And I wonder what you as a photographer do. What's your aesthetic going in and your ethic going in terms of how you view your subjects?
Wow. You know, I mean, I I think the thing that I kind of, you know, I wanted to take beautiful photographs that have a certain amount of dignity and respect. And that was the first initial thing to go in and to do. That was like my main thing was, all right, that's what I'm going to do. And then, of course, then what happens is then you then develop relationships, right, with your subject. And they then become friends of, you know, 20 years now, right? And, you know, Hector Extravaganza is a really, really good friend of mine who, you know, we talk and we're on, you know, I always go to his store. He works downtown. I remember when I first started dating my wife, first thing I did was go and show him Hector. And he was like, who's this woman? You getting married? What's going on with you
and
now?
What is she wearing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And stuff like that. And then you know, giving me advice around that idea. So I think it's much, you know, so in turn, then it was a much bigger deal. I think then what then ultimately also happened was then some people have passed away and some of my really good friends passed away in the scene. And I remember back in around maybe 2001, 2002, I had a really serious lull that I didn't even want to go to balls because of that. Yeah. So
great work, Gerard. So great to talk with you. Thanks for being on the program.
All right. Thank you very much.
Gerard Gaskin, New York-based photographer, recently won the Center for Documentary Studies' first book prize in photography. His latest book is called Legendary, Inside the House Ballroom Scene. He's going to be giving a talk tonight, 6:30, at the Center for Documentary Studies. Center is also presenting a collection of his work from now until February 2014. You can get more information about all of that at our website, stateofthings.org. Thanks for listening. The program is produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, and Sean Wen. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, the news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.